Welcome to Keep Making Movies, the podcast where we explore, shall we say, movies that may have needed a bigger budget. We evaluate the movie for what it is, decide if it could have been improved with a budget, and if it'll join our Keep Making Movies official recommend list. I'm your host, KJ, and with me is...
Tom.
Today we are discussing Andrew Zed Sekula's Cube 2 Hypercube. This is Sekula's second feature-length film, and Sekula has been the cinematographer on quite a few movies, including Pulp Fiction. Cube 2 is very similar to the first movie. We follow people who have woken up and are unaware of where they are, why they are here, and they are again in a maze of identical cubed rooms. The cast of characters this time include, but are not limited to, a generic woman, a blind woman, a woman suffering from Alzheimer's, a man with a knife, and Jerry, a friendly software engineer that would probably do okay on Jeopardy. They move from cube to cube while an unknown force is trying to kill them, and eventually they realize they're in a 4D maze, and our lead woman makes it out of the maze. In the last few minutes of the movie, it's revealed that she was sent into the maze to recover a device that the blind woman had hanging on her neck, and then she's shot. Dead. Fade to credits. So, Tom, what do you think the goals of the creators were with Cube 2?
I think the goals of the creators were to take this small concept of a single room type of film and make it more radical, make it cooler, make it hipper, use a few more graphics and all that type of thing, and expand the cube lore. So it's not just cubed, it's four dimensions now, and isn't that rad, and so on and so forth. It actually kind of reminds me a little bit of murder mysteries, like Agatha Christie murder mysteries, where wherever Mrs. Marple goes, somebody just dies, and then she has to solve it, and it's kind of the same setup. Wherever cube goes, a bunch of people for some reason are locked in and they have to solve the cube. You know, it's just it's another thing like that. And consequently, it also functions kind of like a horror film franchise, right? Horror film franchises work in the same way. We have a cast of somewhat generic characters who are killed off by the monster. In this case, the cube thing is the monster. So if we think of this in terms of the development of a franchise, which is what they do, there's more cube movies after this, then they're creating, I guess what you could say, is a horror movie in which the monster is the set, which is I think it's a fairly original thing. I don't know if it's entirely original, completely unique, but that's something to be said for it. That you don't see in other horror movies.
Sure, sure. And especially at first, it feels like it's the way the cubes move in four dimensions that is the threat. Eventually, it feels more like, no, there's a spinny thing right there. It almost seems, I don't know if it's conscious, but it's attacking. It's not just it's not just the rooms are folding in on themselves and people happen to be in the wrong spot. There's at least one scene where it feels like they're being targeted by the cube, the hypercube.
Indeed, yeah. It's not entirely sure why the hypercube is targeting them, or why it's killing them off. You kind of learn that all these people are the enemies of a evil corporation that seems to be a subcontractor with the military. And so it's this sort of evil corporation, evil military alliance that is the reason why these people are being put in the cube and killed. Though it seems to be not a highly expeditious way of getting rid of your enemies, but you know, fair enough. So there's a little bit of a reasoning there. It's not entirely sure why the cube as a thing, as a device, the Tesseract as they call it, is doing this or what it does, right? Like it's kind of hard to figure out the parameters. In the first movie, the cube is just something that it's a bunch of rooms with death traps that move around, and it is just exists. We don't know why it exists. It just exists. And you have to figure out prime number sequences in order to
map it out. so to you can map figure out where out. You are, how to move forward or backwards or whatever way you want to go. Yep.
Yeah. In this movie, you don't have that. You have a code, which turns out to just be the time in which the cube is going to fall apart. And if you, at the time when the cube is about to fall apart, jump through a hole, which is pretty easy to see, you'll be okay. Unless somebody shoots you in the head. Yeah.
Right. Until you get out. Yep.
So I think that's that would be my interpretation of the goals. The goals is the set is the monster in this horror film. What about you?
Yeah, I agree with that. I also think they wanted to up the game a little bit. One of the things I'm glad they didn't up the game with is the gore, right? The first cube had the guy, his face was burned out. There was somebody else who exploded. In this one, there is some blood. Like the one guy gets chopped up, right? There is some gore, but I'm glad they didn't just be like, oh, now this is going to be the gory cube. That figuring out how to get through the maze is more of a challenge and turns out it's impossible. So that is another way they raise the bar. I think the touch to open doors was, I imagine the actors from the last one were like, I'm so tired of opening these doors. I just don't want to do it anymore. So the solution might have been to have the touch doors instead of...
bad CGI touch doors.
Yes. The gravity changing between rooms. Right, that was kind of a cool effect. I don't
know.
Doesn't
do anything though.
Right, it doesn't help the plot at all.
It doesn't. It's not a threat. It's not. It's just one thing that happens, and then they move on. Yeah.
Yeah. But it is. It's also fun. The way they shot that almost worked. You know what I mean? Like it gave you something else to look at while you were watching Cube. And then introducing the time travel piece. Right. So they see themselves sometimes. And I guess it's not just time travel, it's also multiverse. Mm-hmm. So I think they wanted to take what Cube had and introduce some more elevated ideas. And here's some of the examples I think that they included.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree. The problems with those things is that the multiple universe stuff does nothing as a particular threat unto itself. Right?
Yeah, it would have been cool if they handed themselves something or...
Mm-hmm.
Right. The coolest you get is when the guy with the knife, we see him again. He has gray hair, so it suggests he's been there a while. But he has tons of the badges of the one person that he must have killed over and over and over again. He had a bunch of watches from another guy he must have killed over and over. So they kind of play with it there a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose in that. But even that does nothing really for the plot other than actually lower the stakes. Right, because those guys and that gal, apparently they're still alive somewhere in the cube, and so their death isn't as much of a threat. And also, his actions are kind of strange. We're not entirely sure why is he killing these people, other than he can. When he's threatening the old woman, he's trying to get information out of her. He thinks she's playing silly, that she's actually not. Suffering from Alzheimer's.
Any kind of memory loss, right, yep.
Yeah, that's just she's... So there's a reason why he's violent with her. But with the other people, he's just sort of violent because he can be, he wants to be. This movie requires someone to be a bully because the first movie also had a bully. So it ends up becoming kind of not that interesting or not that threatening, in part because his actions have no reason behind them. And in part, it matters less because there's just an infinite amount of that woman who's running around.
Yeah. And he also turns off his bullying when that's required for the plot, right? It's also, he amps it up when he gets frustrated or mad or we need tension. And he kind of turns it off when, no, we got to work together for a few minutes here to get to the next room or figure out the next.
Yeah.
So...
You're not entirely sure why he goes crazy. And there's scenes, too, where the blonde woman goes to run away from him, and he just kind of stands there and doesn't chase after her, but kind of yells. So you're not entirely sure. Yeah, you're not entirely sure why he doesn't do that. I mean, his actions seem not to have any kind of weight on the overall plot. Unfortunately, very few people's actions seem to have weight on the overall plot.
On the overall plot, yeah. Yeah, and we're kind of talking about it, but how do you think they did with the money they had?
Well, they had more money than the first one. We don't exactly know how much more, but they had more money than the first one. And I think they did less well with it than the first one. They substituted visual things that were visually, I wouldn't say the first cube is visually interesting, but it's more visually interesting than this. And they try to make it more visually interesting by adding CGI, a rotating shape that kills people, crystal things that come out of the
kind of slice up the room a little bit,
slice up,
smush
the room,
up the room. I don't know. Yeah.
Or kind of burn the bodies or something. It's, I'm not entirely. Yeah. Yeah. It's a little unclear as to how this thing hurts people. And then there's the CGI ending, which is a marvel of animation.
Well, even the opening credits had CG. Mm-hmm. So the first movie was 1997. So I imagine any CG in there was probably pretty expensive, right? Windows 98 isn't out yet. They're, whatever they're working with is some pretty old computers. Mm-hmm. Whereas this is 2003. So Windows XP is out. We're way further. Like that was a big jump in at least consumer electronics. And in the opening credits, they are drawing the cubes at what looks like on like a blueprint style format. And then we get a fade from those drawn plans into the actual filmed white room. And it all lines up, which suggests they've created that white room in CG as well. So they could use the actual room or they could use the CG counterpart for when they needed it. I imagine a lot of the special effects, like the walls coming out and stuff, were easier to blend because they had the CG. The whole set was also in CG and in real life.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so they can merge the practical and the computer graphics much easier. Okay,
but I think that hurt it. I think that hurt it a lot. Like you're saying, the doors, they just.
The doors open. The doors are CGI, audience. So when you just kind of hold your hand in front of them, like you're going in and out of a supermarket or something, and they open up, but they look really bad.
Yeah, and that threatening force, whenever it showed up, you just it took me out of the movie because you knew it wasn't there. It just
It's a little bit ambiguous as to what it is or what it does. I mean, it seems to smush people or rip body parts off of them or something. I mean, we're not entirely sure what it is either. Is it the universe changing?
Collapsing that in 4D, this happens sometimes. And since we're 3D, we get smushed by it, right? You fold paper and there's an ant on there. Whoops. I don't know.
Yeah. There's no real. And you don't know when it's coming either.
Right. Every so often, the blind woman will be like, I think it's coming to like try to build some tension. But.
And she's sometimes wrong. Sometimes it doesn't happen.
But one thing I thought they did really well is every time they entered a new room, how it was shot made me want to see what was in the new room. They did a pretty good job of focusing on the characters. The characters looking at something. I'm like, oh, I want to see what's in this room. And they did that a lot, and I thought that worked pretty well. Mm-hmm. I don't remember in the original cube having that same... Right, in the original cube, a lot of the rooms were booby-trapped, and I had to throw the boot. So I was almost afraid to see what was in the room. These, it was like, oh, I wonder if they're going to introduce something.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't always introduce something, but...
Yeah, you see them focused on their faces more so, and then... Yeah, I suppose... that's nice. It creates kind of anticipation. There was never really a lot in the rooms, though.
No, that's
right.
Yes.
And then the nice thing about having an invisible threat, but you know, possibly a room could be booby trapped or possibly not, is that it really heightens the tension there. If there's just kind of random things in rooms, it doesn't really heighten tension, especially since some of the things you're looking for are either a reflection of them in a past or an alternate version of them, a past version or an alternate version of them, or what have you, which the alternate versions of them, except for the guy with the knife, aren't really threatening. Very often, sometimes they're just corpses.
Right.
My favorite one was when they were all dead in one room.
Yeah.
And originally I thought they were dolls. I thought some, like, the room had somehow made fake dolls, or somebody of the group had made dolls of everyone. And I thought, well, that's so funny and weird. I really like that. How, like, some of this stuff is kind of creepy random, but no, they're supposed to be dead.
Supposed to be dead. Which, so now you got to think about it. They all decided, well, this is the room we're just going to lay down in and die.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Unless, because they didn't get cut up. They didn't look smushed. They looked like they died of natural causes, mm-hmm. all sitting together. Kumbaya.
Yeah, and clean clothes.
Right.
Yeah, so I suppose that was it.
Another thing that drove me nuts is the camera spun a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget, there's one scene where the guy with the knife is making a big speech, and the camera's just spinning around him and around him and around him and around him. And I'm like, man, if they don't stop doing this soon, I got to skip or something. Like, I can't take this spinning anymore.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, it's a little, that's a little annoying. And they do that with, to indicate a sort of the potential that the gravity is going to work differently in different rooms. But very often the camera kind of tilts downward or to the side or something like that, and it does nothing to the gravity. It's just he's spinning his camera around for whatever reason.
They also will sometimes leave the camera there and fade people in and out to show that they're traversing through cubes.
Mm-hmm.
But that kind of breaks the illusion, right? Because we know as the audience there's only one cube. But in the first Cube movie, they never do that. They want to make sure you absolutely think they're moving from cube to cube. Here, since I know it's the same cube, but I'm trying to get into the movie, but then they're like, well, you know, we just had the people walking around and we're just showing you that instead of them going through the doors.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they don't even want to admit that there's only, like, that there might be a chance if there's more than one.
Yeah.
We did get the first four-dimensional sex scene in a movie, I'm assuming.
It apparently looks like anti-gravity sex, which I don't know if we've had that in a movie before.
That I wonder, did they do that in Passengers with Chris Pratt and Jennifer Lawrence? We did that on Talking Pictures Trivia.
We did. That was 2016.
I was
going to
say that would be after this. So maybe that was inspired by.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, yeah.
But
that
they
was
also have gravity. That ship has gravity in it, don't they?
It does. So maybe I'm mixing it up because she's in the pool at one point. The gravity turns off and she's going to drown.
Oh, that's right. And the pool.
But I didn't know if they also, there was a room or something. I'm trying to remember. But that wasn't necessarily 4D. I think this might have been 4D. Not
4D's
just gravity.
Sex.
Oh, yeah. This is 4D.
Mm-hmm. <it's>... Yeah. Also a completely incomprehensible scene that does nothing for the plot or the characters. These people end up having sex, I guess, because it's like, well, we're going to die, so we might as well have sex. But it doesn't tell you really much about them as people. It does nothing for the plot. They just end up. They kind of die, right, when we see them?
Well, we see another, like, I don't know if it was in the same corpse room, but in another corpse room, we see them intertwined, mm-hmm. like Pompeii or something, still spinning around.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's how they went. Maybe we just weren't made for 4D intercourse. Well, they did build it up a little bit. The guy's name was Max, and as soon as he saw the girl in the red dress, he was like, oh, the ratings of this show just went up.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, that kind of showed, but her, nothing, and then all of a sudden it was like, let's do it.
And it doesn't matter. That's also the thing. It doesn't, the fact that he's a little, that she's, like, the sexy woman in this, and he's kind of into her, the fact that that ends up in a sexual act doesn't do anything for the plot. It doesn't tell us really much about these characters. It's a way of, I imagine, getting what he must have thought of as a cool shot, having these people floating around and the red dress kind of coming undone and wrapping around them and, you know, all this crap. And but I think that's what he was going for, this kind of aesthetic look, which is supposed to be what I think is the best thing in horror movies, which is beautiful nightmare, right? Something beautiful that is also an indication of a horror, right? What you might call the sublime. But in order to do that, either you have to connect it to the plot in some way, right? It advances the plot. It's not just a random visual, but it's connected to the plot, or it collides with the visual aesthetic up to that point, therefore creating discomfort. David Lynch does this all the time, where you'll see something that is just inexplicable in the midst of this chaos, and that builds the tension. In this, we have a physical explanation of the sex. We have no characterological explanation, and the visual isn't that intriguing, mostly because we get an explanation of it, and then it doesn't do anything in the plot. It doesn't raise the stakes. It doesn't lower the stakes. Apparently, they die doing this somehow. That's never explained, other than hand-waving quantum physics, which it's fine to hand-wave in science fiction or in speculative fiction in order to establish rules that we can then follow to do something. If your hand-waving is anything can happen, I guess time works differently here, so now they're dead, then all it does is suck out the energy from a movie. There's no waiting for anything, because anything can happen, because time is different here. And so it just becomes kind of dull. It becomes a very dull experience.
Well, as I say, I think this is the first 4D sex scene, so maybe in the future somebody will take the torch and keep running.
Right? Like, keep going.
Yeah. We're criticizing it pretty harshly, but it's the first one, maybe.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
You know, another thing I was thinking, because there's no color in the cube, it's all white, editing this must have been a nightmare, right? You better have kept that footage very well organized and very well labeled, because otherwise, if you had to go find a shot that you kind of remember happened, it all's going to look the same. You're going to have to watch all the footage again, right?
The movie must have had impressive paperwork. We can say that about this film.
Documentation behind
this. Documentation yeah. behind Cube 2.
I would love to see that, actually.
Must be Excelsior.
Yeah. Seriously, to keep it all straight, like...
Yeah, and especially since most of the things they do are not consequential.
They could almost happen in any order. They could almost... it's 4D. It's a hyper... like.
Yeah. I mean, you need to introduce the characters first. So you need this stuff in the beginning where the happy engineer explains things, and you need them to introduce Alex. What's the last name? There's a secret conspiracy super genius guy.
Oh, yeah.
Who one character thinks might be responsible for the hypercube. Alex something or other. Alex Traverse or something like that. You need to introduce that in the beginning as a potential explanation, because that gun is later fired. And we could talk about that and how uninspired that was if we want. So Alex ends up being the blind woman.
Girl, Sasha. Yep.
Yeah, Sasha. So Alexandria, I suppose, is her first name, and she's apparently designed part of the cube. Can we work through this plot?
They all had something to do with the cube. And I'm pretty sure she did like software simulation or something on the 4D-ness. So without her research, they couldn't have even started to build it. But she had nothing to do with the actual building.
Yeah, she didn't want it. But they were going after her because she had something.
Something around her neck, right? Either a USB stick, some data.
Something like that. And so she wanted to hide from them, so she hid from them in the only place she knew, the hypercube.
The hypercube. And somehow, this version of people were the right version to get that correct USB stick, right? Because presumably there's a bunch of Sashas in there too, no?
I suppose so. And I guess we know the... woman who is the lead, who is not Sasha. Her name is
Kate.
Kate Fillmore.
Can I tell you my favorite Kate line?
Sure.
God, you know, I wish I was just smarter.
That was mine like she would have been able to. I almost texted you that one. Apparently, the idea is so Sasha has something around her neck, and the whole purpose of Cube 2 Hypercube. Depending on what ending you get, there's two endings, which we can talk about. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
There is two endings. We could talk about it. But in the first ending, Kate is just killed. So Kate, you find, is like an operative. She was there to get the thing from around Sasha's neck, and so they just kill her. That's the whole point. In the other version, Kate comes back and they explain more. They still shoot her in the head for some reason, but we learn that Kate is the most successful operative that's ever gone in there, that she's only been in there for 6 minutes and 59 seconds. That's how long she's been in there, which is also the time signature when the cube dissolves. And I think she's the first one to survive. She's the first one ever to survive. And so for some reason, they then kill her anyway, despite these things.
And how do they know she's the best operative if this is the first one to survive?
Because I guess survival is the thing that gets you to survive. It's a little confusing because I guess she's the best because she survived. But the reason they sent her in there was to get the USB port or the whatever the thing is around Sasha's neck, which in the past, I guess, hasn't worked. So it keeps getting destroyed and remade when the cube returns. The pieces don't exactly line up. But there are two endings because there's an infinity.
I watched the one with all that explanation.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. Okay.
The Prime Video one that I don't know if they're both on there, but the one I clicked on in the end said, yep, you were in there for 6 minutes, blah, 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 and then.
Oh, the other one, they just shoot her. Hmm. I just, yeah.
Well, what do you think, Tom? Do you think a budget would have helped this movie?
No. The problem with what would you do with the budget again, it kind of comes down to the script, right? You need better stakes. You need a better puzzle. I mean, the first one puzzle is kind of a little silly with prime numbers, but whatever. There's a way of getting out, and you can see these characters, how they could get out, and what's preventing them from getting out. And so then when obstacles come in their way, it gets you frustrated because you want the obstacles to go away. In this, they have no idea how to get out of there. There's no clue.
Things
just happen.
And when they open a door, it's usually a different room on the other side, even if it closes and they open it right away, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't they just sit by one door and keep tapping it? What's the point of actually moving, right? If the goal is just to keep seeing other rooms... Open the door, close the door, open the door, close the door, open the door, close, right? And maybe you'll find other people that way, and then they can either jump in your room or you jump in there, but.
Yeah, but they have no strategy for solving the problem.
Right, yep.
Other than let's look at this number, but it's only her looking at the number, and it doesn't, you know, it doesn't really seem to matter. When you find out the secret about Sasha, that she's actually Alex, it does nothing. You learn nothing more about the Hypercube or whatever. And even in the secret puzzle in the end, which is 6:59 is the point when the hypercube dissolves. First of all, who solves that? People keep writing it everywhere, but we're not entirely sure who figured it out.
No.
It's just a number out there. And she kind of figures it out in the last minute. And it just, all it does is say at 6:59, jump into this hole. There's nowhere else to go at that point. So it's not exactly a stunning victory on the part of this lady here. Yeah. So I think if you had a larger budget, I can't imagine like a $40 million version of this would have such low stakes. It would the script would have to go through committee, and you would get a script by committee. But that at least would have stakes. The characters would be doing things for a reason, even if it was kind of cliched. And the thing with Sasha would be far more dramatic, even if it is a little, even if it would be hypothetically a bit eye-rolly. So I think probably a budget would have helped. I think you would have forced a better script.
I agree. And I imagine even in the script they had, they might have had more things they wanted to do that got cut. This is 2003, so this is post-Lord of the Rings. I also think if they're going to use that much CG... I think a bigger budget going into either more graphic designers that would have had more time to build this or visualize the hypercube collapsing better, visualize some of the rooms smushing the people better. I think that would have helped. And again, I imagine there was stuff they wanted to film that couldn't make it that would have really helped the film.
Helped the experience, yeah. Yeah, I think maybe making it look better would have...
Because that's kind of what it had going for it.
Was the CGI?
It was the visuals,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah,
we're saying there wasn't a lot of tension in the puzzle solving. There wasn't a lot of tension in the character development. So it really was an aesthetic movie, is what is kind of why you're here.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you think, Tom? Does it make the official recommend list?
Well, if we're looking at the type of movie that goes onto this list, it's the type of movie that we can tend to find on this list. I don't think it's particularly good. And I think the budget, if it is over $1 million, I don't know. I'm going to say no. How about that?
No from Tom. It's a no from me. I think if you watch Cube, you don't need this one. I don't think it does anything that Cube didn't already do. So if Cube's on the list, and then you want to see the sequel, by all means, go check out Cube 2. But I don't think we need it on the list because Cube is already there.
Yeah.
And the spinny camera work is so brutal. I don't know if I could recommend somebody having to sit through that.
Yeah, from the cinematographer of Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, I guess maybe he wanted to do a lot more with Pulp Fiction. Or was there a lot of spinny cameras in Pulp Fiction? I'm trying to remember.
There is some stylized camera work. You could think of the cab ride that Bruce Willis's character takes. It's kind of a stylized thing, but I don't remember any particularly spinny camera stuff or camera, like upside down camera angles that indicate we're in zero gravity when we're not. Yeah, so.
Well, it's official. Cube 2 Hypercube has not made the list. Hopefully we'll watch some more of Sakula's movies, and hopefully Sakula keeps making movies, and maybe another entry will make it on the list. What's your favorite movie by Mr. Sakula?
You can rate and review this show anywhere fine podcasts are available. For those viewing in YouTube land, if you haven't already, please like this video. Subscribe to the Talking Studios channel for all our exciting content, and follow us on social media at Talking Studios. Check out other shows by Talking Studios, including Talking Pictures Trivia, where we explore movies through trivia, Limited Lexicon, where we play through text-based adventure games, Get the Point, where we slowly reveal a movie poster and try to guess which movie poster it is. And Adapt It, where we explore adaptations in various forms. Got a question for us? Call the Talking Studios hotline at 201-467-8679 and leave a message. It may be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Keep Making Movies, wherever fine podcasts are found.
Join us next time when we discuss Alien Outpost from 2014. Stay tuned for our first impressions of Alien Outpost.
Wow, Talking Studios.
Next week, we'll be watching Alien Outpost. Tom, how was your watch?
My watch occurred in my kitchen, I guess. It's kind of a rough movie to get through, I would say. I think the director is the guy who took over Avatar The Last Airbender television show on Netflix.
Oh,
The new one, yes. I think so. I couldn't confirm if they were the same person. They both have the same name and work in VX, so my thought is they're the same person. But I'm not positive. But it's a movie. It's a movie that I don't really know what the point of it is, and it's also remarkable for how many guns they load but don't fire in a movie about firing guns. there is a lot of plot points that are set up.
You don't mean literal guns, you mean
Chekhov's guns. Yeah,
because they fire a lot of guns in this
they
movie.
Fire a lot of literal guns, but Chekhovian guns they don't. There's a lot of things that are set up that just, and you're like, okay, how is this going to be paid off? And it just never is paid off. They never get back to it, or the payoff is so slight that you either don't notice it or can't possibly care. And I'm not entirely sure a movie doesn't have to have a point, but I'm not entirely sure with a movie like this if it doesn't have a point or it's point is muddied, because it's pretty obviously linked to the Iraq War in some way.
Well, we can get into it next week. If you
yeah, but anyway, I guess I don't have to go into any depth now, but we could talk about that. How about you? How was your first watch? What was your first impression?
So my first watch was 8 years ago, and I didn't realize it was that long ago. And what I remembered from the movie compared to this watch was a little bit different. I forgot how bro-y it was. Audience, this is a very bro-y movie. My gosh. It's in a military setting, so I guess that's kind of makes sense. It's also pretty anti-Islamic for no apparent reason, unless, like you're saying, maybe it's got something to do with the Iraq War. So audience, I don't know. I would check the trailer out before diving right in, maybe. Just make sure it's all right with spending an hour and a half or whatever is a long time to be, you know, shooting stuff, bro. Like, it's pretty bro-y. Alien Outpost is available on AMC Plus at the time of this recording. I've never hit play on AMC Plus.
I did not know that was a thing, and I don't know why this is on there. Great. I'm glad.